Tribhuvana.
Tribhuvana.
Three statuses of planetary systems. Kamanam.
Kamanam.
The most desirable.
The most desirable.
Tamalavarnam.
Tamalavarnam.
Bluish like the tamal tree.
Bluish like the tamal tree.
Rabhikara.
Rabhikara.
Sun rays.
Sun rays.
Gaura.
Gaura.
Golden color.
Golden color.
Baram Baram.
Baram Baram.
Glittering dress.
Glittering dress.
Vidhane.
Vidhane.
One who wears.
One who wears.
Vapuhu.
Vapuhu.
Body.
Body.
Alaka Kula Avrita.
Alaka Kula Avrita.
Covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp.
Covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp.
Anana Bhabjam.
Anana Bhabjam.
Face like a lotus.
Face like a lotus.
Vijaya Sakhe.
Vijaya Sakhe.
Unto the friend of Arjuna.
Unto the friend of Arjuna.
Ratiyastu.
Ratiyastu.
May attraction be reposed upon him.
May attraction be reposed upon him.
May.
May.
My.
My.
Anavadya.
Anavadya.
Without desire for fruitive results.
Without desire for fruitive results.
Translation. Sri Krishna is the intimate friend of Arjuna. He has appeared on this earth in his transcendental body, which resembles the bluish color of the tamal tree. His body attracts everyone in the three planetary systems, upper, middle, and lower. May his glittering yellow dress and his lotus face, covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp, be the object of my attraction, and may I not desire fruit of results. Report. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When Sri Krishna, by His own internal pleasure, appears on earth, He does so by the agency of His internal potency. The attractive features of His transcendental body are desired in all the three worlds, namely the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. So a comment here. What we have is a personal description of Lord Krishna's transcendental body by Bhishma Dev, who is a very qualified observer and who had been associated with Lord Krishna almost the whole time that Lord Krishna was there, which means over 100 years. And he's describing the color of Lord Krishna's transcendental body to be like that of a tamal tree, which is dark blue. And that's the description he used. And this is not the only person who's used this description. Therefore, Krishna, another name for him is Tamal Krishna, because he has the complexion like the tamal tree. And when the gopis of Vrindavan were frightened at the appearance of Aristasura, the demon who took the shape of a bull, he was a very gigantic demon. He came into Vrindavan he was roaring, and his roaring was so loud that everyone was totally frightened. And the gopis didn't know where to go. Everyone was calling out for Krishna, and the gopis went and embraced tamal trees because they reminded them of Krishna. And this way they felt safe. So, Lord Krishna's form was actually dark blue, transcendentally attractive. It is not just fictitious or some mythology. Bhishma Dev was not a mythologer. He was a very down-to-earth personality. After all, he had been basically supervising the administration of the world government for hundreds of years, longer than that. And very qualified, not a sentimentalist by any means, not prone for dreaming and making things up. So his description should be accepted. And the whole Vedic literature is compiled by Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva was a contemporary of Lord Krishna and Bhishma Deva. All these personalities were on the planet at the same time, and it's described in the scriptures themselves that that was at the end of the Dvapara Yuga, which was a little bit over 5,000 years ago. Unfortunately, unscrupulous persons today do not accept the words of Srila Vyasadeva nor the Vedic scriptures. They prefer to assign a more recent date to them and give a different author. And then, that way they can more or less do away with the whole concept that Krishna is a real person or Krishna is God, and they can ascribe the whole series of descriptions to mythology, as they've done with Greek mythology and whatever. And this way they can say there's no real Krishna, there's no real, just fictitious. Well, this is very demoniac, but they're motivated, they have their reasons. Why? Because they're attached to one, material science. That's one group. Others, the Mayavadis, don't like the fact that God could be on earth and that he could perform all these wonderful activities. They prefer the idea that we are all God or there is no personal God. So they also combine, they agree with this. And then there are the followers of different religious paths who would prefer that there not be such a culture or scriptures that is so old that could be authoritative, which might predate their own scriptures. They consider it to be quite a formidable competition if, after all, the oldest scriptures in the world, thousands of years predating theirs, describe God in very clear terms and his activities, then it might, in their opinion, undermine the preeminence that their particular faith seems to hold at this time. Consequently, you have a whole, all different groups joining together on one theme, and that is, let's discredit the Vedic scriptures and let's eliminate this person, Krishna. Well, this is not new. Kamsa also wanted to eliminate this person, Krishna. And he also combined forces with many demons, Arista, Putana, Agha, Jarasandha, Shishupala. The list goes on and on of the demoniac persons that felt that Krishna's presence, his mere presence, was a threat to their material enjoyment. So nowadays, we have a similar group who also feel that Krishna's mere presence, or the mere presence of his devotees, assigns a threat to their whole material way of life. Because after all, they want to hold on to their atheistic and ungodly activities. So the best thing to do is eliminate God, then you don't have to worry about any principles that we must follow or must not follow, what is right and wrong. We can set our own standards for what is right and wrong. What do we need God to dictate to us for? This is the underlying problem, or the underlying demoniac mentality that is going on in the world. Therefore, it's so important to actually establish these literatures as they are, to widely disseminate them, and to explain that they're to be taken literally. People prefer not to take them literally. You mean there's actually a person, Krishna, who's bluish? There's actually a battlefield where so many people fought. Yes, all these things are to be taken literally. You mean Bhishma Dev actually was lying in a bed of arrows? Yes, literally. When some Christians were speaking with Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada was quoting to them some things from the Bible, how they should not eat meat or not kill and do. And they said, well, do you think we should take the Bible literally? And he said, yes, let's take it literally. That's the position of the Vaishnava. He's able to advise everyone for their best interest, how to follow their own religion. When we say own religion, actually religion is one. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat punita. It's given by God. But there may be different duties for different persons in society. For the Brahmin, they have their duties. The Kshatriyas have their duties. The meat eaters, they have been benefited greatly by such personalities, such merciful, empowered living beings as Lord Jesus Christ and Muhammad. These two have especially shown great mercy upon the meat eaters to give them some guidance, so at least they could also be gradually elevated. Therefore, these scriptures are the Quran and the Bible, Old Testament and New Testament, are very much appreciated by mediators. That is all right. Just like in a pharmacy, there are all different types of medicine. And different persons come in and they require a different type of medicine, and the expert pharmacist knows which medicine to give them according to the prescription of the doctor. So the Vedas, the revealed scriptures, provide all kinds of guidance and help for everyone. From the meat eaters up to the Paramahansas, everyone can appreciate something from the Vedas. And the Acharya has the... Acharya means one who teaches by his example, and it also means one who is expert, who is a professor of transcendental knowledge. He knows how to disseminate Vedic knowledge according to time and circumstance. He'll give just what is required to the particular persons and the particular place. Lord Jesus, he was speaking to uncivilized persons in the desert, and therefore he could not give so much information. He said, there's many things I could give, but you're not ready yet. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, on the other hand, was in a very favorable circumstance. He was residing in Bharatvarsha. In fact, the place that he traveled, many of the people were very cultured, spiritually. But even then, he also did not give the highest information to everyone. He didn't talk about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis to everyone, only to a very few, a handful of people. Others he would discuss, the philosophers he would discuss metaphysical knowledge of the soul and the nature of this material world and the nature of the living entities and the different energies. But to the mass of people, he just taught them to chant the holy names of God, specifically Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So, but some of his intimate disciples, he revealed the highest truth and explained the Srimad Bhagavatam, the later cantos, the 10th canto, to the very exalted personalities. And they have also expanded on that, such as primarily the six Goswamis have expanded tremendously on those confidential topics of Lord Krishna and his rasas. Continuing in the purport, nowhere in the universe are there such beautiful bodily features as those of Lord Krishna. Therefore, his transcendental body has nothing to do with anything materially created. Comment. We, in our present state, are not able to fully appreciate the beauty of, the transcendental beauty of Lord Krishna. That requires one to be very, very pure and full of love for Krishna. Otherwise, you will not be able to appreciate it. Someone might say, well, why is that? Well, that's just the way Krishna is. Krishna does not like to reveal himself to those who are not qualified. He just has no interest. Why should he? As even in the Bible it says, don't cast your pearls before the swine. So, it doesn't make any sense to bring the most beautiful, valuable gems and give them to the swine. They won't know what to do with them. They have no appreciation for pearls or gems. So if you bring them there, then you're a fool. But Krishna is not a fool. He reveals himself only to his most confidential devotees. Naham prakashya sarvasya yogamaya samavita mudo yam nabijanati lokamama jamavina. So the foolish remain covered, avritam, by different energies of the Lord, deluding potencies. So they cannot see Krishna. Even when Krishna comes before them, they cannot see his beauty. They miss out. Just like a blind person. The blind person, you can bring the most beautiful painting, the Mona Lisa, in front of him and say, what do you think of this painting? He'll say, doesn't mean much to me. He cannot appreciate because his eyes are defective. Certainly those whose hearts are defective, whose consciousness is defective, will not be able to appreciate the supreme pure Krishna. That's why we take to the chanting process, so that our hearts become cleansed of all impure tendencies. And when the heart becomes cleansed, cheto darpana marjanam, then we will receive the transcendental knowledge. We will cross over the ocean of material existence, cheto darpana marjanam, bhava maha devagni nirvapanam. The blazing fire of material existence is extinguished. Vidya varujivanam, anandam burivaranam. We can taste the ocean, the unlimited ocean of transcendental bliss. All these things are there for one whose heart is pure. And the one who prefers to remain with the sinful desires, such as lust, anger, greed, those are the primary three gates leading to hell, then for them, Krishna is not important. They prefer naked women or naked men. This is their... They prefer bodies made of stool and urine to Krishna's Satchidananda body. So it's not surprising that persons whose consciousness is very gross will not appreciate. Svavidvaraho strakarai sangstuta purushapushu nayat karna patopeto jatu nama gadagraja. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Praise those men who never hear about the glories of Lord Krishna. But this is what we have, basically a society full of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. And it's not surprising that they're not interested in hearing about Krishna. Shouldn't be surprised. But those who are willing to hear about Krishna with the proper mood of submission and from the proper persons, the devotees of the Lord, and from the proper scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, they will attain the highest perfection of life. Continuing in the purport. Arjuna is described here as the conqueror, and Krishna is described as his intimate friend. Bhishma Dev, on his bed of arrows after the battle of Kurukshetra, is remembering the particular dress of Lord Krishna which he put on as the driver of Arjuna's chariot. While fighting was going on between Arjuna and Bhishma, Bhishma's attraction was drawn by the glittering dress of Krishna. And indirectly he admired his so-called enemy Arjuna for possessing the Lord as his friend. Arjuna was always a conqueror because the Lord was his friend. Bhishma Dev takes this opportunity to address the Lord as Vijaya Sokhe, friend of Arjuna. Because the Lord is pleased when he is addressed conjointly with his devotees who are related with him in different transcendental humors. Comment. Yes, there are many names of Krishna that are in relationship with his friends or his devotees, such as Yashoda Nandana. That means the bliss of Yashoda. Or Nandanandana, the bliss of Nanda, Nanda Maharaj. Gopi Jana Balava, we sing that. Gopi Jana Balava, that means he gives pleasure to the Gopi Jana, the Gopis of Vrindavan. He has so many names, and he prefers these types of names that are in relationship with his devotees. So God has unlimited names, and especially the intimate names are in relationship with his devotees, such as Radhika Raman, one who gives pleasure to Radhika or Radharani. So there are so many names. Continuing. While Krishna was the charioteer of Arjuna, sun rays glittered on the dress of the Lord, and the beautiful hue created by the reflection of such rays was never forgotten by Bhishma Dev. As a great fighter, he was relishing the relation of Krishna in the chivalrous humor. Transcendental relation with the Lord in any one of the different rasas, humors, is relishable by the respective devotees in the highest ecstasy. Less intelligent mundaners who want to make a show of being transcendentally related with the Lord artificially jump at once to the relation of conjugal love imitating the damsels of Brajadham. Such a cheap relation with the Lord exhibits only the base mentality of the mundaner, because one who has relished conjugal humor with the Lord cannot be attached to worldly conjugal rasa, which is condemned even by the mundane critic, ethics. Comment. This is again referring to those who are known as Prakriti Sahajya, those who take devotional service very cheaply. They're not interested in following the rules and regulations of the scriptures. But they have a sentiment towards Krishna, and they imagine that they themselves are gopis, even if they're men. Of course, it is a fact that being a man in this particular incarnation is not a restriction for being a gopi. That's a fact, because this body is just a dress, and the eternal soul is actually related to Krishna as servant, as and that can be in any rasa. There are 12 rasas, 5 direct and 7 indirect. Everyone is situated in one of these rasas, at least. But the Prakriti Sahajyas, they're very attracted to Krishna and the gopis, but they're not very attracted to following Krishna's instructions. And so we see that these persons are also attracted to mundane sexual affairs. So it's not just with Krishna that they want to enjoy these kind of conjugal relationships. They like to enjoy them with others too. That's the difference. The real gopis, those who really are on the transcendental platform, they only would engage with Krishna. No one else. and the six Goswamis, who, although they appeared in male forms, they were in the mood of the gopis, and they also had no relationships with any mundane females or what have you. So this is the test. If someone is speaking about, he only wants to talk about Krishna and his pastimes with the gopis, and Radha, Krishna, what have you, but at the same time he's still attracted to mundane sex life, then we can understand this person falls in the category of Prakriti Sahaja and is disqualified. We should not hear from such persons, we should not associate with such persons, because otherwise we'll become contaminated. Continuing in the purport. The eternal relation of a particular soul with the Lord is evolved. A genuine relation of the living being with the Supreme Lord can take any form out of the five principal rasas, and it does not make any difference in transcendental degree to the genuine devotee. Bhishmadev is a concrete example of this, and it should be carefully observed how the great general is transcendentally related with the Lord. A few important points here. First of all, the eternal relation of the particular soul is evolved with the Lord. One should not prematurely try to jump and claim his eternal relationship with the Lord. That will be revealed as one advances and one becomes purified. It evolves. And one should also not bring in mundane conceptions into this, like thinking that, well, I want to have this relationship with Krishna because it's higher than someone else's relationship. These considerations of higher and lower or better and worse, they're all mundane. In the spiritual world, everything is absolute. Everything is on the same transcendental nature. There's no higher or lower or better or worse or good or bad. It's all perfect. It's all transcendental. So the relationships that are enjoyed by the cowherd friends with Krishna are perfect. They're perfectly satisfied and they're perfectly glorious. And the relationship between the parents of Krishna is also perfect. It cannot be improved. So, all of us have a relationship in the spiritual world with Krishna, and that will be revealed in due course of time. But we should not be impatient to understand that. That will come. Sometimes devotees become a little impatient. They want to immediately know their rasa. And they may go to someone and ask him, can you tell me what my rasa is? And he may say, yes, your rasa is this or that. Consequently, the persons may become confused. It is not proper. That will be automatically revealed when one becomes pure and free from all material attraction. For right now, we should concentrate our energy on getting free from the material attractions, getting free from the misconception of thinking on this material body. These people who want to know their rasa, but at the same time, they think they're this material body. That's a contradiction. It doesn't work that way. And all the residents of the spiritual world are appreciating the glories of the other devotees. That is the Vaikuntha mood. It is not that they are thinking, I'm better than everyone else, but they're thinking, oh, just see how glorious are the cows of Vrindavan, for example. In fact, Lord Brahma, he was even saying he would like to take his birth as a blade of grass on the outskirts of Vrindavan so that the dust of the feet of the gopis might sometimes land on him. That's how humble he was. He didn't want to be better than the gopis. He just wanted to be a blade of grass and maybe get some dust from their feet to land on him. That's the humility of the Vaishnavas. Not that I'm going to surpass everyone else. Jai. So are there any questions?
The different relationships that you said, I forget the term.
Rasa.
Does that fall in one of the, I think it was five categories, whether you're a friend or your parent?
Those are the five rasas, five principal rasas. Friend, so, parent, conjugal, means lover, servant, or just an admirer. You can have one of those five relationships. And that will be revealed as time goes.
What is meant by transcendental humors?
Transcendental humors means exchange. Transcendental exchanges. Humors. Relationships.
It doesn't have
humor
to do...
It doesn't mean funny. Humor happens to be one of the seven indirect relationships. But in this particular relationship, the word humor refers to relationship.
Everybody appreciates the devotion of the gopis to Krishna all the relationships are perfect, are on the absolute, yet the devotion of the gopis is usually seen as more than others or something like that. Is it so?
More what?
More intense or something.
So what's the question?
How can be that all the relationship that is so long that is like the same that it's
absolute?
Yeah, I don't understand that.
More transcendental.
If the gopis position is praised by many devotees as being the most exalted. It's like that verse, Ram Ya Ka Chitupasana, Bhajabhadu Bhagina Bhagavata. There is no, Lord Chaitanya said, there is no form of way of worshipping Krishna better than or higher than that conceived of by the gopis. Bhajabhadu means the damsels of Vrindavan. Yes, that is the the glory of the spiritual world, that everything can simultaneously be one and absolute, and at the same time it can be different. Everything is of the same transcendental nature, but still there can be higher and lower on a transcendental platform. But still the lower is not lower, it's also perfect. You understand?
It's perfect.
Well, there's perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. In the material world, you can't use those type of superlatives. You can't say something's more perfect because it doesn't hold any meaning. So, what if it's perfect? How can it hold more perfect? But because we're entering into another dimension now, we're on the spiritual dimension where everything is completely perfect, but you can also have more perfect and most perfect. As we open the door to a whole other realm, just like the word siddha, perfection, is used to describe those who realize that they're not the body, who realize that they're Brahman. That's just the beginning of perfection. So the impersonalists, they stop there, they think, now I've reached perfection. I realize that I'm spirit and that I'm not matter. Well, okay, that's nice. But now that you're spirit, what if you have to go further? So the devotees go much further into that siddha, that perfection. They go on and on in their relationships with the personality of Godhead. So we're entering into a different realm, the spiritual realm, where everything is perfect But there's all kinds of varieties. And nobody thinks demeaningly about anyone else. No one thinks that that they're better. Although, the devotees may think that the gopis are the best. That doesn't mean they think, oh, the gopis are great, but the friends of Krishna, they're just, you know, useless. They're all great because they're all in relationship with Krishna. And the gopis, everyone thinks they're the greatest devotees, but you know what? They were discussing the bamboo flute that happened to be played in, by Lord Krishna. They were saying, how has this bamboo flute gotten such a wonderful opportunity to be kissed by Krishna? We don't even get kissed by Krishna like that. He's just a wood, just made of bamboo. Why should he get that opportunity? So they were transcendentally envious of the bamboo flute. So it's all transcendental. And if it's not understandable now, then we should just wait until we become more advanced and it will be revealed. Any other?
Can we establish the Vedic literature in the public as true scriptures of the Lord before the people are pure?
Yes, because some of them are innocent. Our business as Madhyama Adhikaris, there are three levels of devotees. There's the Kanishtha Adhikaris, who are the beginners, and they are attracted to the deity, but they don't understand the difference between the devotees and non-devotees. They don't, therefore they can't preach. Then the Madhyama Adhikaris, the second class devotees, they make four distinctions. They see the Lord, they see His devotees, they see the innocent, and they see the non-devotees, the atheists or the demons. So, they know how to preach. They're the preachers. Because they see the innocent, they preach to the innocent. They associate with the devotees, they worship the Lord, and they avoid the demons. The demons you avoid, but the innocent you preach to. And they're just uninformed. So if you inform them that this is the actual historical record of God's appearance on this planet, not just this time, but also in the past, many different appearances, and the innocent will accept it. The demons won't accept. So we have to fight with the demons in different ways, and we're working on that, and how to fight with them. Not necessarily physically fight, but we may have to provide scholarly evidences using, as Prabhupada said, there's a type of logic that I take the pestle. You know what the pestle is? For pestle and mortar for grinding spices or in chemical you grind thing. So I take the pestle and I break your teeth with it. So the idea is I use your terms, your method. The now we have the modern scholars. So they're using their methodology. So we'll use their methods, we'll use their words, and then we'll break their teeth, and we'll destroy their arguments. And we may have to do that, because otherwise they're misleading the public.
What's the difference between the innocent and the demons?
The innocent, if you speak to an innocent person and you inform him that this is the truth, then he'll say, oh, okay. Thank you, I didn't know. If you tell a demon that this is the truth, he'll say, I'm going to kill you. He'll become angry. How dare you say that? That's the difference. Like a child. A child's innocent. Everyone knows. A little child, you can go and you can explain things to him. Even the child of a big demon, oftentimes, the child is attracted to chanting and the parent and the demon father says, no, come. They're devil worshippers. So that's the difference between the innocent and the demons. By associating with demons, he'll probably become a demon. That's what happens when you associate with demons. Similarly, if that child were to come and associate with the devotees, he'd probably become a devotee. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said that we can make an offer that anyone who has unwanted children, they can give them to us, and we will raise them up as devotees. Yes.
So what is our scholarly evidence for the verification of this line? The correct description?
Well, of course, the obvious evidence is given by the historical record, the scriptures themselves. one can trace out the actual times by astrological calculation and what have you, and other means too, to prove. Of course, we accept the disciplic succession as being very authoritative, but we may have to use other means too that are appreciated by scholars, such as archaeology and these are not perfect sciences or perfect proofs by any means, but we may have to use them just to satisfy or pacify the scholars. But the problem is that they already have a bias against it. It's not like a fair... There may be some innocent among them, but there are some who actually are not innocent and who know exactly what they're doing. Just like Sariputta Prabhu was saying that many of these big mathematicians, they know that the whole theory of chance is absurd. They know that the chances of everything in the universe the chances of the whole universe coming about by chance are just ridiculous. To the nth degree, the most absurd. So they know mathematics. Even for example, they use the theory that given enough monkeys and enough typewriters typing, sooner or later they would come out with Shakespeare's, Hamlet or something like that. Okay. So they say, by chance, it would happen. So if you analyze that a little further, and you take, let's not deal with Hamlet because that's long. Let's deal with Mary Had a Little Lamb. I think it has 22 characters. All right, let's just see, what are the chances of monkeys coming up with that by random selection? So, we know there's 26 letters and a space key on a typewriter. Now, the chances of getting the first letter to be M, for Mary, are 1 chance in 27. All right? Now, the chances of getting M-A consecutively, like in 2 hits, M-A, the monkey would hit 2 letters, they're 1 chance in 27 times 27. So that's about 650.
What was the question?
Excuse me?
What was the question?
Question?
Yeah.
Well, her question was about scholarly methods to prove to the scholars these days the authenticity of the Vedas. So I'm pointing out that there are some who are innocent and who will accept the evidence as we present it, scholarly, and some won't even accept that because they're already dead set against it. They know exactly what the truth is and they don't want to hear the truth. And I'm pointing out that even in science there are many. And Sariputta, I gave the example of the mathematicians. They know that these statements are absurd. And to prove it, we're pointing out that Mary Had a Little Lamb. If you have the monkeys try to type that, the chances of getting M-A consecutively are 1 in 650. And then getting M-A-R would be 650 times 27. What is that? Now we're getting into big numbers. 600 times 20 would be 12,000. Say, all right, say 15,000. So, in other words, you could expect, according to the laws of chance or the odds, of coming up with MAR would take, you'd expect it to come out once out of 15,000 tries. And similarly, M-A-R-Y times another 27, so 15,000, let's say times 30, you know, 450,000 tries. And then each time you go on, so if there's 23 characters in Mary Had a Little Lamb, it comes out to the chances of coming up with that are one chance in 10 to the, 15th degree. 10 to the 15th, which means a 10 with 15 zeros after it. Now, if you took, you know, all the monkeys, we don't have that many monkeys, first of all, but let's say humans, let's throw them into the category too. And take all the humans that have ever existed, you know, going back as far as you want to go to the time they say the Homo sapiens began. And if you had each one of them typing 23 characters every second, you know, because let's say they could do a whole test.